This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. It's Mira Sivasodi. Welcome to the show. We've all forgotten where we've left our car keys, whether we switched on the iron, whether we turned it off, perhaps the name of a casual acquaintance. But when you're a certain age, that forgetfulness tends to come with worry. Might it be dementia? And today we explore that as well as, you know, other facets of dementia with Linda McNabb. She's a specialist nurse in this field and she's come all the way from the UK. Welcome, Linda. How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you.
What brings you here to Malaysia?
I was very lucky to be given the opportunity by Dr. Luan Chong.
Mm-hmm.
She trained as a psychiatrist in London and returned to Malaysia 3 years ago, working in, as a consultant geriatrician psychiatrist in the University of Malaysia. And she realised that there was a huge gap between the services provided for people with dementia in Malaysia and what's provided in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
Went back this year and met with an old colleague of hers, Dr. James Warner, who she looked for someone who she could recommend, who could come and talk to staff, train staff around what's good dementia care, look at gaps in the services and what Malaysia needs to provide for the future.
Right, and you're a specialist nurse in this field.
I am.
What does that mean? I didn't know you had to specialise. You know, you have subspecialties in nursing as well.
We do. In the UK, there's many specialties in nursing, from older adults' mental health to cancer nursing to palliative care nursing, where people at the end of life care. And older adults' mental health, we have dementia nurse specialists and we have admiral nurses, which work with family caregivers as experts, giving them advice, emotional support, pointing them in the right direction to help the person with dementia, to prevent the caregiver from becoming stressed and burning out.
Yep.
And becoming unwell themselves.
That's right. And you know, the UK would have come a long way as well, Linda.
Yeah.
I'm sure all of these services didn't exist even before. How did it all begin? And how did you start to realise the need for caregivers as far as dementia is concerned?
Well, it was actually the caregivers themselves who realised we need help. We need someone who can support us, who can help us to gain understanding, gain how to look after the person with dementia, because that's what they do, they look after the person. And it was them themselves who began to campaign, and we have the Alzheimer's Society in the UK, and they're a very powerful organisation. And we have Dementia UK, Age Concern, there's lots of voluntary organisations that have a really powerful voice. Most of them have been started by caregivers.
Right.
Who are looking for help.
Mm-hmm.
And from there it has has developed into quite a powerful voice that influences the government, the change policy. The government now within the UK has a real strong driver to raise awareness in the public around what dementia is, how you get help. There's lots of research funding. There's funding available to help caregivers. So that's how it began. Began from the caregivers themselves,
sure.
Not from the government.
Yeah, not from the government. So initiated by the caregivers. And
absolutely.
I'm just thinking whether that push will ever come here in Malaysia. As long as we have the liberty of, or the luxury of having foreign domestic workers. And they seem to be the ones, Linda, in this country, most often than not, who are looking after dementia patients. Now, how important is it for you to be a trained caregiver when it comes to looking after someone with dementia?
It's vital. It makes the difference between someone living well with dementia and someone being looked after. And there's a huge difference in that. Living well means that you are able to still participate in life. You still can go out and meet your friends. You still have an active part in the community. Maybe slightly different from what it was before you got dementia, but you still have that active role in life. Whereas when you're looked after, that's taken away from you.
Yeah.
People do for you, they do things to you, rather than allowing people the chance to experience life, continue to experience life. So it's vital that staff who are caring for people with dementia understand about the illness. Massive things around communicating with people with dementia. It's so important to get that right. And again, that can be the difference between someone who has dementia living well and living happily,
yep,
to someone being distressed.
Mm-hmm. And what has been your experience like in the UK?
In the UK? Mm-hmm. As I said, there's a huge driver for all healthcare staff to be trained in dementia care. All nursing staff will undertake, as part of their nurse training, which is a 3-year programme, will have to undertake a placement within older adults' mental health, and that could be in dementia care or in another setting, but it always has to be older adults' mental health, and that's about either 3 or 6 months. So they have a good understanding of what it's like for someone who's an older adult experiencing mental health problems and dementia. A lot of the services in the UK are based in the community.
Mm-hmm.
So we go and visit people in their own home. We then have the opportunity to see how they're managing. People who are out with dementia who come out their home will function very differently from what they're like in their own home. So we have that opportunity to go and, you know, work with someone in their own house. We make sure that there's lots of community services available for people. There's a lot of support for caregivers. There's lots of community support groups. So where the caregivers meet together, talk about the stress of looking after someone, what it feels like, and get support from each other. That's not necessarily run by a healthcare professional,
mm-hmm,
but it's about peer support, about them caring for each other, getting knowledge, getting advice, sometimes just having someone who can listen.
Yep. There would have been gaps in the services between what could be offered to caregivers with the elders with dementia. What are these gaps, Linda?
Do you mean the gaps between the UK or the gaps here in Malaysia?
In the UK first.
The gaps in the UK, still there is a reluctance for some people to go and get a diagnosis. They feel that becoming forgetful is part of old age, and
I always thought it was part of old age. That's just us being in denial,
yes,
isn't it?
I forget lots of things. Yeah.
I'm nowhere near 65.
No, I'm not near 65. Getting there quickly, though. But, yeah, I mean, I think there's gaps in the services, but there's not enough community care. We believe that people should remain in their own home with services going into them. Our last stage would be somebody going into a nursing home. That would be our last resort, really. But there's not enough community services that are dementia orientated just now to allow everyone to stay at home. But I would say about 2/3 of the UK population with dementia live in their own home.
That's a really good thing.
Yeah, it's amazing. It makes such a huge difference to someone's life.
Yeah, and it goes back to caregiving.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It all goes back to caregiving.
Absolutely.
All right. The prevalence of dementia in Malaysia, based on University Putra Malaysia statistics, about 14.3%. And is that a worrying trend? What would the statistics be in the UK?
Within the UK, we have about 800,000 people who have a diagnosis of dementia. However, we think that there's possibly about 45% of people who live without having a diagnosis, who just live their life and never get a diagnosis. As people are living older, and one of the risk factors about dementia is the longer you live, the higher at risk you are. As people are living longer, the prevalence will increase. There'll be more older adults living who will have an increased risk of dementia.
Yep. I mean, just like osteoarthritis,
yeah,
and cancer and things like that. We're all going to be living longer.
Yeah.
And so inevitably, it is going to creep in.
Yep.
Creep up on us.
Creep up on us. Not everyone gets dementia, but yeah. Well,
What's the prevalence like?
In the UK?
Yeah.
Over the age of 65, the prevalence is something like, I can't remember the top of my head. I've got it here. Yeah, as I said, there's about 800,000 people with dementia in the UK. And as you get older, the prevalence will increase every 5 years. So your increase will go from maybe 1 to 12 to 1 to 10, 1 to 8.
Right.
So it increases that way.
So it is going up.
Yeah. So people over the age of 95, which in the UK is not uncommon for people to live to 95. It's about 1/3 of people over the age of 95 will be at risk of having a dementing illness.
Yeah, and I think that statistics of 2/3 of them living at home is so encouraging, honestly. Because you always think of dementia, doom and gloom. You need to check into a nursing home, or, you know, you become very reliant on people. Misconception, I have to say. There's another a question here via text message. Is Alzheimer's synonymous with dementia?
If you think of dementia as an umbrella term, like cancer, so you have cancer as a word, and then you have all different types of cancer.
Yeah.
Dementia is an umbrella term, and you have all different types of dementia. So it's really important that if people are worried, they go and find out, they go into a memory assessment service where they can have specific tests done so that they can have a proper diagnosis. One of the best news is if you go along, you have your assessment done and you don't have a dementing illness. That's the best news you can get.
Yeah.
But there's lots and lots of different types.
What are some of the early warning signs?
I don't want to make people panic, but it is about that kind of forgetfulness, forgetting appointments, forgetting to meet your friends for lunch. If you always meet them on a Tuesday afternoon and then you kind of forget to do that. You forget where you've put things. And I don't want to worry, you know, the general public, because we all forget where things are or we all forget appointments, but then we remember we've forgotten them. Someone who's in the early stages of dementia won't remember that they've forgotten it.
Right.
That's the difference.
Thank goodness.
Thank goodness.
I was just going to say I have all of those symptoms.
No. No. We all been to an interview and you've came out and said, oh, I wish I said that. That's normal.
Yeah, okay.
That's normal. It's if you came out and you never remember that you've forgotten. Does that make sense?
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
When should families start to seek help?
As soon as possible. I mean, I think as soon as someone themselves begins to worry about their memory, or they notice that their family is forgetting, family members forgetting things, they're misplacing things, they're denying that they've forgotten things or misplaced things, that's when they should seek help, because it's always best to get that diagnosis very, very early on, because it enables the person with dementia to make plans for their future while they still have the ability, the capacity to make decisions about what they want to happen for them around finances or where they want to live, or well, they can still make lots of choices.
You know, the gaps in Malaysia, what would those be, Linda?
I've only been here for less than 2 weeks. I've been here literally, I think, about 8 days, and I've only seen a limited amount of services, so I can't comment widely on the whole of Malaysia. That would be unfair to do that. I feel that from what I'm hearing from people, there's a lack of education for the general public. Nurses, nursing, as part of your nurse training, you're not taught about dementia care and looking after someone with dementia. There's no community services, as far as I know. We have limited day services. So we have a day centre here in KL, and I think there's one in Ipoh.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say the other name wrong. Jaya.
Johor Bahru.
Johor Bahru.
Okay, that's all right. You've only been here 1.5 years. Johor Bahru.
Yeah, Johor Bahru. They have daycare services where relatives can take someone with a dementing illness who can go there for the day so that the family can go to work. And I've only seen the one that's in PJ. And that seems to be the only community service that's available. And if someone then becomes, and they have the maids come with them.
Mm-hmm.
And the maids look after them at home. And then when that becomes too difficult, it seems that then the person ends up going into a nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
There's no in between. There's no kind of looking at trying to get that person living at home healthy in their community. It's that they become seen as too difficult or too stressful for the carers, for the caregivers.
For the caregiver.
Yeah.
When we come back, we'll find out more about caregiving for patients with dementia. If you have a question for Linda, she's a specialist nurse in dementia for caregiving, send it through. The number is 016 201 9000 or tweet BFM Radio.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. It is The Bigger Picture and it's Mira Sivasuthi. With me, Linda McNabb. She's a specialist nurse. We're discussing how we can deal with dementia better. It's very obvious that, you know, we have a very, very long journey ahead of us, Linda, in terms of caregiving and support for people who suffer from dementia. Is it hard work, though, being a caregiver?
For a family caregiver, it's very hard work. It's very stressful. They're seeing the person that they love and that's been around, either their husband, their wife, their mother, grandmother, changing. And that's very distressing. And sometimes further on in someone's illness, they may not recognise their family member anymore, and that's incredibly distressing for family caregivers. But they can get supported through that. They can, as I said earlier on in the conversation, they can start to be that powerful voice that take things forward and that start to say, actually, we need help. We need help in order to look after the, you know, my mum who has an Alzheimer's, or my husband who has a vascular dementia. We need help to look after this, and we want more. So it has to come from
the caregivers.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to speak up a lot more. There are different professionals involved in providing medical care for patients with dementia. Mm. Who else would it involve?
Okay. Within the UK, I mean, I don't know what it's like in Malaysia, but within the UK, we have multidisciplinary teams. So we have our doctor, our psychiatrist, we have a specialist nurse, we have an occupational therapist, we'll have a psychologist. Sometimes we'll have the pharmacist involved, if that's what needs to be involved. And what we do is we will sit down with the person with dementia, is often involved in the conversation, and the family caregivers, and sit down and have a discussion around what is the best way to work with that person, the person with dementia and the family. So it's a team decision. No one person says, I think we should do this. It's discussed as a team. It can cause heated debates, heated discussions.
I'm sure.
But always to find out what is in the person's best interest. You know, so we don't do that. We don't have one person who makes all the decisions about where someone should go, what treatment they're on, what treatment they're not on. In the UK, we try very, very much not to use the psychotic drugs. We try to use looking at how we can work with someone without putting them on medication.
Mm-hmm.
Different the anti-dementia drugs, the drugs that are out there available to help people who have Alzheimer's. But we tend not to use sedatives or things that will make people more confused.
It sounds like a huge financial burden on the NHS, Melinda.
It is a huge financial burden on the NHS. However, what I can say is that family caregivers in the UK save the government approximately £8 billion a year.
How so?
Because they care for the person at home. So if they weren't there and they weren't healthy and weren't being looked after, the person with dementia would end up in a home or in a hospital, and they couldn't manage at home. So actually, within the UK, family caregivers are an asset, and yeah, they save us a lot of money.
I'm sure. But what about the principal caregiver, Linda? I mean, what sort of support does that person need?
The family caregiver.
Yep.
Well, we have admiral nurses, and as I said, they're nurse specialists who specialise in dementia care, who work with the family, and they will visit the caregiver at home, spend however long is needed, on a weekly basis, a monthly basis, allowing that caregiver, giving them advice, clinical advice, emotional support, counselling. Sometimes listening. I was an admiral nurse myself, and sometimes somebody would open the door, and before you'd said hello, they had started telling you what had been happening in the past week.
Mm-hmm.
And I would sit there for an hour just thinking, okay, she'll breathe in a minute, she'll calm down. And then eventually she'd go, oh, and how are you, Linda? And then we would start to do some work. Because it's really stressful and it's really distressing. If you're looking after someone, you need that support. You need someone to understand how difficult it is. Someone who can not fully understand because they're not doing it for you, but can sit and say, yep, that sounds distressing. And what are you going to do? Asking people, are you going to go and get support from someone? Are you going to go to a group? We have lots of support groups in the UK. As I said, we have family caregivers can go along. And actually, I think, I don't know if this is controversial, but in Malaysia, I think those maids should have education and should be given some support as well. It's quite a distressing job for them if they have had no sleep or they're not sure what they're doing. They think they're doing something in the person's best interest, but it could be causing that person distress.
Sure. And so what you're talking about is to actually have a nurse come in every day, or just to come and keep an eye on what's going on in the house every now and again? What if you don't have anyone at home to, you know, care for this person?
Okay.
And people need to go to work, you know, earn money. How do you cope then?
We have community care services. So in the UK, we will have people who go and visit someone in the morning, help them with their breakfast, go and dip back and visit them in the afternoon, help them with their lunch, help them with their evening meal, take them out to the shop, allow them, take go with them to help them do their own shopping. So they're still empowered to do that.
Empowered
to
is
do
the
that.
Word,
they're
yeah.
still allowed to do that.
Mm-hmm.
We also allow a lot more risk taking, so we don't prevent people from doing things. So we allow people to live at home independently. We put in measures so that they're safe, and we use a lot of assisted technology. But we allow people to live at home. So we would have a community nurse who may pop in once a week, mm-hmm. just to see how someone was doing.
It's a liberating feeling, really. I think I had someone in once to talk about his observations, a survey or research he did at a nursing or a home here in PJ. And that's what he mentioned. His findings were that they were not empowered. When they first come in, the elderly are very enthusiastic. But after a while, you find them going into a shell. And the reason they're slipping into the shell is because they have no voice. They feel that everything's done for them.
Yep.
And it's sort of, I don't know whether it's the Asian culture that we feel we need to speak to them in a childlike manner. And disempower them and do everything for them, that it totally takes away all sense of being empowered.
Yeah.
And they just slide after that.
Yeah.
Do you find that happening in the UK as well?
It did happen in the UK, and sometimes it still does happen in the UK, but we find that we try very much to encourage people to still have their voice, to still make choices, to still live at home, to live with making risks and sometimes making the wrong decision. But we've all made wrong decisions in life. Just because you're older and you have a dementing illness doesn't mean to say that you're to stop doing that.
Mm-hmm.
We've all made mistakes.
Yes, we have.
As long as it's not dangerous.
What have you observed to be the chief failings of the nursing homes in the UK when it comes to dealing with people with dementia?
I would say it was around, I suppose, lack of getting to know the person as a person. So they come into a nursing home and they become a resident or a patient, when actually what we need to do is think, what is this person? Who are they? What did they do in their life? What did they achieve? What were they proud of? And work with their strengths. So work around the things that someone has achieved in their life to build up their self-esteem, their confidence, empower them. And I think in the UK we still are not great at doing that. So that would, I would say, be one of the main failings. But we're working tirelessly on that to improve it.
You know, nurses in the UK, Linda, are very highly recognised individuals in the healthcare system. I can't say the same here in Malaysia. First of all, we have a lack of nurses. I mean, we don't have nurses in sufficient numbers. We have nurses from abroad coming into work here, culturally very different. But does that make a big difference in empowering nurses themselves to want to go into caregiving for dementia?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've worked in older adults' mental health for 24 years and have built a huge career out of it. That's why I'm sat here in Malaysia talking to you on the radio.
obviously.
So it's something that I feel really passionate about. Nurses should be able to have an equal say in a meeting as to, they know their patient, they're with their patient, they know the person, the patient's telling them what is best for them. The nurse is their advocate. They should be there as an equal voice. They should be learning expertise, upping their skills, feeling proud and passionate about looking after older people who have a dementing illness. So, yeah, I feel that nurses should be empowered.
How can we start putting things in place to make these changes?
I think it starts from student nurse training, or medical training. You know, back in the UK, many years ago, we had a hierarchy system where what the doctor always said was right, and then the nurse was their handmaiden, and that's changed.
Yeah.
That's changed.
What brought about that change?
I think the doctors themselves, during their training, they were taught that actually you have a massive resource here and you're not using it, mm-hmm. let's use it. And for nurses to go and learn and develop their skills and be encouraged to question themselves, reflect on what they're doing, question other people, and not be frightened to do it, not to be scared.
Well, you need a mature system for that as well.
You do, but you also need people who feel passionate about the job that they're doing and really want to change things, really want to get their teeth into things and develop services, work alongside people. And that's not just nurses, that's across the board, that's any discipline within healthcare.
And in my mind also, the caregivers need to stand up and start speaking, as you said. They are really the biggest voice.
They are the biggest voice, and we need to hear them. They need to stand up, and I don't know if you do this in Malaysia, but they need to shout a bit.
Yeah, influence policymakers. Yes. To get things going.
Absolutely.
I mean, if we don't do something now, Linda, I mean, what's the worst thing that could happen?
I mean, I don't know what the worst thing that could happen is, but I think if we don't do something now, I have the feeling that people in Malaysia are very proud of their country and proud of what they provide, and that that will change. And people may become not so proud of the services they provide for their older people. And yeah, that needs to change. And I think that taking away that stigma, it's nothing to be ashamed of having a dementing illness or having someone in your family who has dementia. It's an illness like diabetes. So you don't have to be ashamed. You can say, I need help. So I think that's what we all together need to think about.
Yeah, and to stop being in denial.
Yeah.
And to learn to accept that this is something that's going to happen going forward. Yeah. I mean, 14.3% of Malaysians with dementia, I think that's a relatively high number. And as you said, as we all move along and start living longer, more of us are actually going to be inflicted with dementia. And you just want to go through Alzheimer's, as you said, is one form of dementia. There's a vascular dementia. What else is there?
There's vascular dementia, vascular dementia is around your cardiovascular system. So healthy heart, keeping healthy, keeping active, keeping your cholesterol down, living a healthy lifestyle. That's one of the ways you can kind of look after yourself better. There's Lewy body dementia, there's frontal temporal lobe dementia. There's lots of dementias out there that people are quite rare and people won't come across. One of the questions that I get asked a lot is it hereditary? And within the UK, I don't know about in Malaysia, but within the UK we have a small number of families in which it is hereditary. But that's a very small number of families who are looked after by the National Hospital of Neurology. Otherwise, it's just something that unfortunately will progress as you get older.
Yeah. So how are you going to part with some of this knowledge here in Malaysia? I understand there's going to be a talk on the 26th of October for the healthcare professionals, and there's going to be a talk for the caregivers on the 9th of November. Yeah. What can we expect at these talks, Linda?
I think maybe what you can expect from those talks, I'll be talking at those talks, and I may be talking around changing our attitudes. So thinking about dementia, Dr. Luan Chong will be there and she will be talking around the experience in Malaysia. But I'll be looking at what it is that challenges us about people with dementia, how we can look after a whole person, and about living well with dementia.
Mm-hmm.
And the Alzheimer's Disease Foundation Malaysia is supporting this, and that's how you can get in contact to get further information and advice.
Right. And will the talk suffice? I'm thinking, Linda, I mean, there's so much more that we need to learn from this.
It's a start. Everywhere needs a start. It needs someone who can come in and say, yep, maybe we need to think about this. We can think about it a bit differently. Maybe we can do things a bit differently. And then I'll be going back to the UK, and it's up to the staff that I'm training, the staff that I'm working with, and the caregivers to stand up and make their voice heard and take things forward.
As you said, shout.
Shout.
You have to. Those talks again, 26th of October for healthcare professionals and the 9th of November for caregivers. Once again, just get in touch with the Alzheimer's Foundation.
Alzheimer's Disease Foundation.
Foundation
Malaysia.
Of Malaysia. And you will be able to be a part of those talks as well. It was a pleasure having you on, Linda. What would you like to leave us with before we conclude?
I think I would like to leave you with, I was talking to the manager of the day centre today and I asked her, what would you like me to leave this conversation with? And she said that people stop feeling ashamed, that they start to realise that it's an illness and that the stigma, and to get rid of that stigma. It's not a shameful illness. It's an illness that happens to older people and we need to learn how to manage that within the community.
Thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Linda McNabb, a specialist nurse on dealing with dementia on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.